I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. This week on the show, it is me talking to longtime productivity friend, Charlie Gilkey. He is the founder of Productive Flourishing. He's got a lot going on. Him and I have such a great time when we hang out together. We met a long time ago at the World Domination Summit. I've kind of kept tabs on each other ever since. We're doing some stuff together more and more as things move on, because we had a chance to do some stuff while we were in Austin at a speaking engagement together. We look like we're going to do something in Florida. By the time you listen to this, it's probably going to be out there a little bit, so you might want to check out what we're doing there, and I'll make sure that I link to that in the show notes as well. But we talk about a lot of things. We talk about project work. We talk about a lot of Charlie's philosophies and how him and I align in a lot of ways during this discussion. So, and we also have some bonus stuff for the Patreon supporters. So again, if you're a Patreon listener, then you're going to get another bonus episode of content this week where Charlie and I talk about a whole bunch of other stuff. So let's just get into this now, because we got a lot to cover and a lot of ground to cover in this episode. So here is my conversation with Charlie Gilkey, my friend, on the Productivityist Podcast. You know, it's been over 100, almost 150 episodes, and I've yet to have you on the show. And I'm glad that I have you on the show now, Charlie Gilkey.
I appreciate it. It's, you know, it's one of those things where I'm like, man, I got to talk to Mike. And then, you know, we intend to do it, and then we don't do it, which is really funny because we're both productivity guys, right?
Well, and the thing is that we've seen each other a number of times. And, you know, I actually talked about this with a friend of mine in Vancouver not too long ago. We were both in Vancouver Airport, both, you know, well-known in social media circles and stuff. And, you know, the expectation is take the picture of us, you know, being in the airport, chatting with each other. And we both kind of like, nah. And I think that's what you and I are like when we're like in the same. I mean, I've had the opportunity many times to say, hey, Charlie, let's get together and chat. And it's just like, nah. Well, let's just be present and in the moment and just not do that stuff and set aside the time to do something like this later. Because we've seen each other, well, we saw each other in Austin for the first edition of Think Better, Live Better. We've seen each other at the World Domination Summit every single year, you know, and then we're going to see each other again at the next installment of Think Better, Live Better, which is coming up in Florida. So let's get this out of the way, and then we can actually just enjoy and chat, because we could go on and on and on about this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about it, that one of the, I think for me on my side, Mike, part of it is like, well, like it's hard for us to form a for real agenda, because we know we're just going to get together and talk about stuff. And so it's like, well, what specifically are we going to talk about? Like, we have to have a specific reason.
Right? You know, we almost should do at some point is just do like at South by Southwest a few years ago, there was a British journalist from BBC named David Allen, and he interviewed David Allen on the stage, and it was just a conversation. You and I at some point should just do like a stage show where it's just the two of us sitting in like lounge chairs and just a conversation with Charlie and Mike. And we could talk for like 2 hours about this
stuff. I'm game. Let's do it. Well, I thought we were doing that today. I mean, it's kind of like what we did at Think Better, Live Better. It's like we had sort of that after sort of thing where it's like, you know.
Yeah, I think we should do something like that. But let's talk about the start of the year for most people, which has just happened if you're listening to this when this episode is published. Now, all my listeners, my regular listeners, know that I don't start my year in January. Do you prescribe to that? Like, do you subscribe to that, you know, whole, like, let's start in January thing? I don't think you totally do, but I know I recognize that it exists and that it's a thing.
So I believe in running starts. And I think January, a lot of time, is the time that we actually like get the engines going. But honestly, like, I think Groundhog Day is a way better day to start the year. When you look at productivity, because what we do, what a lot of people do is, you know, we get to the end of the year, we make these really ambitious, wide sweeping plans, and we're going to conquer the world this year. And then we look at our to-do list, you know, or we look at what we've gotten done over January. And it looks basically the same as every other month in the year prior, right?
Yep.
And you know, I'm not saying that's a bad way. I'm saying that's just part of that energy. That's part of that hope. And, you know, February is a really great time to say, you know what? Okay, some of these things just aren't going to make it. And it's one of those things where it sounds like, you know, we could be on Dr. Phil saying this, but if you want different results, you have to do different things, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to just keep getting what you're getting. And I think February is that really great time to not say, how am I going to change my goals? But fundamentally, how am I going to change my behavior?
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, when I wrote the front nine a few years ago, February was my start date. I now start in September to align with the kids' start of the school year, which, again, makes sense. But February, for me, it's still a landmark date because it's the middle of the year. It's kind of like my reset, right? So, but January, for me, is the reflection, you know, review, recharge month. Is it like that for you?
Some ways. See, the thing about it is, because my wife and I have been on academic schedules for so long, our operational year for our business actually starts in August.
Right. So ours starts in September. So around the same time. Yeah.
Around the same time, because we look at where our energy is. And for me, when I look at where my energy is throughout the year, June and July are energetically where most people are in November and December. Whereas in November and December, I historically am actually getting a lot of really good creative energy and things like that. So it's reversed in that way. But it's one of those things to where I do take that time to say, where am I? Where are we going to go? So on and so forth. And we run our business in quarters. And so it's more so than the beginning of the year. It's actually the refresh of a quarter. And so that's where a lot of that will come from.
You know, we never really talked about your origins in productivity. What got you into it? I mean, I know you've been in the space for, you know, as long as I've been, easily. What got you into it? Because, again, you know, it's not when people ask me that question, they often go, it's not really a conventional thing that you would, you know, why productivity? Why? How did you get into it?
I got into it because so here's what I've observed about a lot of productivity geeks like us, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get into it necessarily because you just love it, right? You get into it because you have to, right?
Yeah. It's a cause and effect kind of thing.
It's a cause and effect kind of thing. So I've always, you know, been a fairly driven guy. I wouldn't say I'm ambitious in the sense of having, but I'm always doing something. I'm also a polymath, right? So I'm always, we now call those multi-potentialite but I've always been that sort of guy. And so it reached this critical point in the mid-2000s. Where, you know, I was simultaneously pursuing my career in the Army. I was completing my PhD in philosophy. I just recently bought a home. I was trying to be a decent husband. And it came to this point where it's like, how the hell do I maintain two careers and be a good husband and be a good friend and be a good member of my community, so on and so forth, right? And so like any good, you know, millennial would do, I started a blog about it, right? Because that seemed to make sense. Mm-hmm. But before that, though, I ended up, a lot of people had come to me and asked, like, how are you doing all this, Charlie? I don't understand how you're able to do this. And even like when I was in college, Mike, I would take 21 to 24 hours a semester and I had a job in the writing center, right? And so it's just one of those things where people were always coming to me with how. But in that particular scenario, what really struck me, Mike, is I was an Army logistics officer and I just recently deployed and came back home. And while I was overseas, I had managed to like move really big battalions around, a bunch of equipment and stuff, right? And just these really things. And I was 24 at the time. But then I came home and, you know, these 5,000-6,000 word academic papers were kicking my tail, man. I was like, how is it that I'm able to do all of this really complex logistics stuff? But these, what seems to be fairly straightforward, like you do some research, you make your table of contents, you make your, you know, you make your reading list and you write the paper. Like why is it that that was getting me? And what I realized, Mike, is that so many of the tools and frameworks and insights that we had gotten from, for lack of better words, the practical pragmatic world were not really being applied to creative knowledge work. And as an academic, there was no conversation about productivity, no conversation about productivity. Mm. I mean, we all kind of complained about it, but it was not really like, here's what we're doing. Like, here are some tips, so on and so forth. So productive flourishing did not start as productive flourishing. It started with two other really bad names and really bad audiences, right? Because I was like, okay, I'm an academic. That's how I saw myself at the time. I still in many ways, am of that vein. But I said, you know what? I don't give a damn if no one's talking about this. We need to talk about it. I'm going to start a blog about it. Don't do that, by the way. if people fundamentally are not talking about it offline, the odds of them going online to find out about it are not good.
Right. Well, and the thing is, you were early in that phase too. Like, we both started talking about productivity when it was just in the beginning phase. Like, the Inc.com and Fastco and all those guys weren't writing about it back then.
Yeah, I mean, we were, you know, I kind of look at myself as either the second or maybe third wave of productivity bloggers, right?
We're probably the second wave, because like guys like Merlin Mann and those guys were first.
Yeah.
And then I think we kind of followed. Leo would have been first. Leo Babata would have been, you know, in there. And then I think we were just maybe 1.5 or 2.0, I guess.
Yeah, and so it really depends on where you mark these. But you're right. We are absolutely early. And we were early in the sense that, so, I mean, if you wanted to look at sort of the personal productivity history, like, I mean, it really, when people talk about David Allen getting things done, I love David's work, appreciate what he's done. And the reason why it became as successful as it did in the blogosphere and everything like that is because it got picked up by the geeks and the hackers earlier on, and especially Merlin Mann, like, being an evangelist, and there weren't that many people talking about productivity at that time.
No, it's funny. I had somebody when I told people I've left GTD behind, that was a couple years ago, I had people saying to me, well, you've got your own methodology when you're putting it out there. I'm like, yeah, it's going to be a book and course and all that stuff. They're like, well, David gives it away for free. Like, it's available readily. I'm like, hold on a second. It was not readily available for free he wrote a book about it, and then the internet came along and caught up to that, and now it's out there because he did have those evangelists talking about it. So it's interesting because, yeah, you're right. It's kind of happened in stages, right?
Yeah, it's happened in stages. And so when people come to me now and they're like, I'm thinking of starting a productivity blog, right? I try to tell them what I was like, look, I'm not trying to limit competition. I'm not trying to tell you that you shouldn't. I'm just going to tell you it's a lot harder than it used to be. Mm-hmm.
It's,
right?
It's, you know, Merlin, speaking of Merlin, he has this great talk he did at South by Southwest with John Gruber. And one of the things he talks about is, if you're going to start a blog, like a Star Wars blog, he gets into this. He goes, don't write about Star Wars. Don't even write about, like, say, Jawas. Write about that one Jawa. Like, you know, get really good at that one Jawa, and that's how you'll stand out. And that's kind of what's happened with the productivity space for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm working on a book too, right? And it's one of those things to where my agent and the editors have a very valid question. Like, with all the productivity books out there and all the stuff written about productivity, what are you writing about that's unique? Right? What's unique about this? Because if it's just the same stuff rehashed, people don't want that. Like, why? I mean, now granted, given our industry, we probably have more books on our shelf about productivity. Right. Than the average bear.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm looking at him right now, actually.
Likewise. And I'm not trying to say that we're better than it's our body of work. Right. But it's a very valid question. If you walk down Barnes and Noble and you look at the list and you've got, you know, Start With Why, you've got The One Thing, you've got The Seven Habits, you've got Do More Great Work, you've got, you know, Getting Things Done, you've got, you know, all those different books, you really do have to ask yourself, what's different about the way that you're doing this? Right. And so that's what I will pose to new people who want to step into this. Is like, you know, at a certain point, now this is the difference between being the subject matter expert and being the business strategist, right? Mm-hmm. So I tell them in the beginning, find something, like you said, that one Ewok, right? As your business grows, you can expand to cover more topics.
Yeah.
Because people will listen to you because of your track record. But at the same time, if you come in and you start talking about night owl productivity, well, you know, rightly so, in this age, people might be like, well, you know, kind of Mike Verdi's kind of doing that, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's the weird thing. There's so many voices out there, and we'll never be able to reach a 1% of the population.
No. And that's the reason why it's, you know, why I'm not discouraged. Or I don't think anyone who's been doing this for a while and anyone who wants to get it, don't be discouraged if you're like, okay, it takes a while to build it up. And once you find your audience, then that's pretty, I mean, what's the Kevin Kelly, the 1,000 true fans, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
Now I want to talk a little bit about, falling down, because this is the time of year where people have picked their resolutions or picked their goals and they've fallen down. I want to talk about a little bit that we touched on this before we started recording, but I haven't really talked about this too much. I've written about it in my newsletter and there's a blog post, but my book deal that I had, I was writing a book about a dummies book, and it the deal was killed. And I essentially killed it by not delivering in a way that we mutually agreed upon. To be fair, I, you know, it was one of those things, and it's interesting. You know, the whole idea of like saying no is saying yes to other things. I said yes to the wrong thing when it came to this book. It was the timeline was really tight, and I was trying to fill all of these buckets of things. Mm-hmm. And this is why when I read your Project Cage Match post, it was like, yeah, because I gave up the book deal, and I felt. Well, number one, I'm like, okay, well, that publisher's never going to come back. But that was the first thing that I thought. But the second thing was, like, my shoulders felt like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. And it was like the part of my brain went, crap, I should have just said no from the beginning. But I didn't. And now there'll be a greater consequence to pay. I want to help people, and I know you do, avoid that kind of pain. What can people do when they see some kind of opportunity like that come along and they've got these other projects? How do they decide what wins that battle? What wins that cage match?
Yeah. So I think, I'm going to start in perhaps an unusual place.
Sure.
I want to start with self-compassion, right? And the reason I want to start there is most people that I know, especially creative people, at any given point, you're already overcommitted. I've never seen an undercommitted creative person that's out there doing stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing about, and the reason I want to start there is I think that's the place where you'll start and that's the place where you'll have to end. Because when you start thinking about these new projects, Mike, what happens is we often don't look at these new projects in the context of everything else we're already doing.
Exactly.
Right. We sort of pretend that like, okay, I've got this new book deal coming in and I'm going to, you know, it's going to be awesome. I'm going to do it. But we don't sit back and say, wait a second. Hold the hell up. If I am struggling to do what I've already committed to today, how the hell am I going to be able to do this new, bigger thing in the future? Because there are some big projects like this. And trust me, I am writing the book. I work with a lot of authors. Like, it's not, especially the traditional and published route. Mm-hmm. It's not like this new little project you're just adding on. It's this major chunk of your year. Like I tell people, it's a 3-year commitment. Consider it. It's like a 3-year commitment to get this done. By the time you write it and you go through the negotiations and then it sits and then you go through the promotion and then you go through everything else, 3 years, man. How are you going to basically make a lifestyle or work style change to fit that in there? And if you can't answer that question, you know, I would really question whether a book is actually possible for you or whether a big project like that is actually possible for you. And it's okay, absolutely okay, for you to say, you know what, this is something that I want to do, but I need to spend 6 months reworking my life or reworking my schedule to be able to do something like this. So that's really the first thing. But that's why I started with that self-compassion, because the first thing people are going to want to think, because I mean, we're driven in some ways. The first thing they're going to want to think is like, but I should be doing this and I'm capable of doing this and I should say yes. And there's all this sort of should, like stop shoulding on yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I think should is one of the most unhelpful words in our mental dialogues. Anytime you see a should, please pause and convert that into something like, anytime you see a should or ought, right?
Yep.
Because when you say a should, and sometimes it's either external pressure that's not helpful or it's internal pressure that's not helpful. What you're really trying to say, to achieve this goal, this is the best pathway, or this, you know. Now, that gets you talking about two different things that are up for grabs, right? The goal and the pathway. The goal and the pathway. And you might decide at a certain point that, like, this goal that I'm going after is actually not realistic, or maybe it's not meaningful, maybe it's not matterful, or maybe it just should not displace other things. So that's the second piece I want to talk about on this. Displacement is a real thing. It's like when you get in the bathtub and water, you know, floats up. Anything that you commit to displaces a bunch of other stuff, right? Every time you say yes, you've said no to a near or to a practical infinity of things. And so the whole thing with the Project Cage Match is, you know, it's basically, and I have to explain it a little bit. It's a scheme in American pro wrestling. I think it's actually global wrestling, but I just know it from American, where like basically the strongest competitor wins You get put in a cage, and then the last competitor is the one that wins. Well, in a lot of ways, you have to get real about the fact that there are some things that are always going to win, some values and priorities that are always going to win. And I think the process of working through a project cage match is listing all the things you want to do and saying, okay, which one of these are going to go pretty quickly? Which of these are the weak, have the weakest amount of strength? You can work your way up. And inevitably, Mike, every time I do this exercise with people, there are always a couple of hangers on that, like, as soon as you start the cage match, they don't even get in the cage and they're just like, nope, I'm out. Right. I don't know why we do this to ourselves. Right. Mm-hmm. We have these things that we commit to that really, like, when we sit down and put them in the context of everything else, we know they're not going to get done. Right. And so the cage match allows you to get rid of that. And it also, it mostly is an exercise that when you dig a little deeper, reveals what your true values and priorities are. And that is gold. That's where the gold happens, Mike, right? Because if you realize that, wait a second, I want to do, say, a book, but I also want to do speaking. And I also, you know, my kids are going through this particular stage in life and I want to be there. And no matter what happens, you're going to be there for your kids. You haven't necessarily said, I'm not, I mean, you have said, I'm not going to do these things, but what you have said in a positive way is these are the things that matter to me. And these are the things that I am going to prioritize and get done. Cause I come from the sort of Gandhi school of action expresses priority. Action expresses priority. And I think so many people, when we look at our to-do list, when we look at our resolutions, we confuse priorities with aspirations. We confuse priorities with aspirations. Priorities are the things you're going to do. Aspirations are the things that you're going to tell yourself you're going to do, but probably not going to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I love the idea of the stop shooting on yourself, because when we talk about the now your method, the ought comes in. Like I said, you know, that's the part we get stuck on. You know, we have the things we need to do. Then we have the things that we want to do. But then the middle is the part, the ought. What about the middle part of a project? I know you're big on project stuff. You know, one of the things you've talked about at different talks that we've been at is the finishing, right? Like, everyone talks about the start, you know, get started, do this, start. But the finish is the tricky part. What about the middle? Because I know you talk about the finish, but what are your thoughts on the middle part? Because that's where momentum, I think, can get lost, or when you have the weakness, and weakness is probably not the right word, but I'll use it anyway, where you're more susceptible to taking on another project or another goal or another thing, because the allure or the high of the start is no longer there.
Yeah. So, I mean, for a lot of people, the middle is where the thrashing happens the most.
Yeah.
Right. And so thrashing, I use it, you know, just to be, and we've all sort of know what thrashing is, but I'm just going to do the definitional thing. It's that, it's those processes and activities that you do that are either meta work, or there are a lot of the emotional flailing that's around the work, but it's actually not the work itself, right? Mm-hmm. And so you will wear yourself out thrashing, but not actually look at the to-do list and see that you've gotten anything done, right? And so, I think you're absolutely right. The impetus of the start is no longer there. The fun of the start is no longer there. And one of the reasons I think we get into this messy middle when we start thrashing is our plans are so far different from where reality is, that, you know, our self-talk around our ability to anticipate what's going to happen, so on and so forth, comes in. And so that's defeating. The second one is, things always take longer than you think they're going to take. And I think that's where it catches up with you. Like, you know, I've been working on this 3 months. I should be done for now. Well, you've been working on it 3 months. Here you are, right? That's just the fact of the matter is. Again, because a lot of times we plan projects in separation from everything else we're doing. And so we're like, oh yeah, this plan will take, you know, 3 months. Well, if that was the only thing you were working on, perhaps, right? If that was the one thing you were going to focus your life on for the next 3 months, then yeah, you'd probably be on schedule. But the fact of the matter is, you're squeezing something in time you don't have, right? It's not going to take 3 months. It's going to take 6 months because you're trying to do that. So that comes in. And I think fundamentally, where people get stuck is in this middle is, we get stuck and we stop reaching out to the success pack or our yaysayers, right? Because I think what I've seen happen a lot of Mike, and I'm open to hear, or I'd love to hear what you think about this. When we get stuck in that middle, I think we don't have anything to show for it that we are really happy about, but we don't want to go to the people around us and be like, so I'm stuck, right? I don't know what to do at this point. We want to show them something. You know, if we want to be like, I've done this and here's what you can see, but in the middle, you really haven't, or it's inchoate, or it's rough and you know it and you're embarrassed and you're scared. It's just not at a point in which we think others that we think it's ready for public consumption. And you get to that point to where you don't know how to go forward. It's starting to get self-defeating and you don't want to reach out to people. And at that point, that's where I say it this way, beware the siren call of an easier project, right? Because it's like, this isn't working. This is, and I'll pause here. We could probably rant a whole hour about this, but somewhere along the way, Mike, we picked up this idea that if it's hard, it's the wrong thing, right? Mm. Like if it makes us uncomfortable, or if it pulls up cognitive dissonance, or if it makes us question our abilities, it's the wrong thing, because the right things are easy. Bullshit, right? The things that you should be doing at some point, if it matters to you, you are going to have to dig in and push it forward. And so we use that messy middle, that hard thrashing point, as some sort of psychic clue that we are doing the wrong thing. And then we jump to something else, right? And the thing about it is, once we get into the middle of that project, we're going to be in the same place, right?
You know, it's fascinating, because I fall prey to this too. I don't know if you do. I'd love to hear if you do. But the idea of if you've got more on your plate, and I think it's just the allure of I have so many things going on, and if I do, then I am accomplishing a lot. And which is, it's not even the busy factor. It's the, well, look at all these different moving parts. And if I focus on these moving parts, as opposed to letting go of something, and one of the things that I actually want to touch on really quickly is Casey Neistat. You know who he is, right? Casey Neistat. Yeah.
I don't actually.
Okay. So Casey Neistat, and I think you'd find his one video. He used to do a daily vlog. And the thing is that used to is because, you know, he ended that in November of 2016. After doing it for over a year, a daily vlog, and it was really well done. And one of the videos I really enjoyed was his called Fat and Lazy, where he broke down how he, you know, worked his day, which I know you would appreciate. But he, it was so popular. He made, you know, he started it to actually break out of to see if he could do something with it creatively. And then he quit because he wanted to see if he could do something else creatively. And, you know, to let go of that, to let go of this thing that has been such an integral part of his life for the past year, I guess for over a year and a half, almost, we're closing in on 2 years, is such a, it's one of those things where people will say, why would you do that? And the other half of the population will go, well, good for you, good to move on. One of the things that I've been looking at, and you know, by the time this is aired, there will be some things that I'll have to let go of. How have you struggled with letting go of certain? What's the thing you've struggled with the most of letting go of, and yet did it, and you felt, wow, okay, I'm so glad that I did.
I do have problems letting go of things. Mm. I tend to. I'm pretty brutal about things in the sense where I know that the longer I do something, the more inertia that it has. And so what I'll do is we do at least quarterly, like we look at everything we're doing. And so, for instance, we look at the podcast, right? Do we want to keep doing the podcast? Is it still hot? Is it still serving our ends? So on and so forth. We've been doing it, I think, almost 2 years now. Maybe a year. I don't know. You know how things go. Yep. Like that, right? Like,
yep.
And I'm like,
you do the number math. You're like, okay, 132 divided by, oh yeah, like a year and 8 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, we started at some November. I think it was not Nat last November. So maybe there you go. Anyways, doesn't matter. I look at it and say, is this still serving a purpose? Because I think, if we take a higher perspective of it, when we start making our plans and goals, We make those plans and goals from the perspective of the seen world that we're aware of. But the seen world, our seen world, is always infinitely smaller than the full world, mm-hmm. right? It's always infinitely smaller than the full world. And as you start doing things, you start seeing more and more of this full world. And the trick is always to update your awareness and update your goals and plans to reflect the reality that you can see and that's in front of you. And what that mean by that, most times, we start things way smaller than they could be. Or we don't choose an option that will grow bigger because we don't think we can do it. Right.
Right.
And so I'm always looking at what we're doing. It's like, you know, should we change the way we're doing our blog? Should we change our newsletter? Should I start this? Like, and it could be annoying for my team because it's like every quarter, but I do that because I know if I've been doing something for 2 years, it's way harder to kill it than if I've been doing something for 6 months and just trying it out. The other thing that I would say on this one though, and this is the thing that I have to bake into my own sort of productivity OS, is everything is a project. Everything is a project. Projects have beginnings, middles, and ends. Right. And sometimes those ends are just arbitrary. And I know that sounds funny, right? Because we think that you have something, but like this video blog series, like he could have done that forever. Right. Yep. He could have done it forever. But I'm guessing that he looked up and said, is this something that still has the magic and joy and is taking me where I want to go? Mm-hmm. And if you answer no to that, then the very best thing that you could do is stop doing it, right? Not to keep doing it. And just wrap it up like that was an interesting project. And I learned this from my mentor, Seth Godin. I should say mentor from afar, Seth Godin, mm-hmm. In the sense where he stopped the Domino Project books, yep. right? Now, there are a lot of, you know, other reasons why he stopped it, but he had a really successful run with these books, right? And opened up a lot of space. And at the same time, he just said, nope, we're done. That was a project. Moving on. You know, at the time, I was like, wow. As I learned more about, you know, the, you know, stuff around, I was like, okay, I can see why that would happen. But at the same time, he could have kept doing it, I think this is going to be pseudo philosophical, but we have to recognize that we are fundamentally different people today than we were 2 years ago, or 5 years ago. And if we were to go back 5 years ago, if we're doing our best work in the world, we're really pushing our growth edges, you're never going to be able to see where you're going to be in 5 or 10 years. So we need to assume that if we go back 5 years ago and would not be able to predict where we are today, we also need to say, I'm not able today to predict where I'm going to be in 5 or 10 years. So the goal is then not to keep pursuing this plan or straitjacket or this goal, but to really keep updating yourself and saying, who am I today? What matters today? And nothing may have changed, right? Your values and priorities may stay the same, right? But, you know, in the case of bloggers, you reach a point where it's like, I don't know that I want to do the blog anymore, or I don't want to do it that way. I don't want to be on an editorial schedule anymore. I'm just going to write whenever the hell I feel like it. Okay. That's a valid option, right? You don't have to do it that way over and over again. And I think that's the balance or the tension here is, on the one hand, committing to long-term goals and seeing them through. And on the other hand, being able to see that some goal or plan that you made in the past was either too small or out of alignment and letting go of it. And I don't have any really good, like, 7-step processes for how to handle that. I'm just saying, be aware of that and be hyper conscious of the fact that, you know, if you're starting to really resist something, if you're starting to really not like it, if the joy in it is gone, you got to reconnect with that, with whatever you started, and or make a conscious decision about it, because otherwise you're going to seek a sustainable mediocrity, right? Because you're not going to quit, but you're not going to succeed at the same time. You're just going to kind of hang on to it. And that sustainable mediocrity is going to keep you from the higher level success and something that matters most to you right now.
As you said, Charlie, we could go on and on about this stuff, because you and I are, we geek out about this stuff all the time. And we'll have to do something together down there. We've been talking about
this for a while. We're going to schedule this one. We're going to schedule another podcast episode after this one. How about that, Mike?
Yeah, we should definitely do that. Charlie, where can people find you and your work online?
So the best place to find me is productiveflourishing.com. That's where we share a lot of these tips on productivity and strategy execution and tools to help you go from idea to done. That's the best place to find it.
Awesome. Thanks for joining me, Charlie.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
There was a lot more that Charlie and I talked about. It was a great conversation. We went on for almost an hour, started talking about planning, things like that, like bigger term planning, longer term planning. And if you're a Patreon supporter, you're going to get that as a bonus episode. Can't tell you when, because we do schedule these in a little bit of an interesting order, but there will be a bonus episode with Charlie. So be sure to catch that when it comes out. But if you are not a Patreon supporter and you want to hear that, now is the time you can rectify that. Go to patreon.com/productivityist. Learn how you can become a supporter of the show for as little as $1 a month. And every single cent goes to making the show better and supports the show. Whether it's to going to my producer, John Polstra, who does a lot of great work behind the scenes, whether it's putting together show notes, which we've leveled up in recent months, all that stuff. So Patreon supporters have a direct impact on making the show better. So again, head to patreon.com/productivityist if you want to hear more of Charlie and you want to hear more just in general, because there's a lot of bonus content and perks that come along with becoming a Patreon supporter of the show. Now, if you want to support the show in another way, you can also leave a rating or review in iTunes or your podcast listening platform of choice. Stitcher does it as well, because that way we can hear what you're saying and make the show better. Big thanks to Charlie for joining me this week. Big thanks to John Polster for producing the show. And big thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks so much. And until next time, this is Mike Vardy, the host of the Productivityist podcast and the founder of Productivityist, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.